member of the Beasley Broadcast Group. This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Tube Talk.
Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. I'm an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and I sing the songs in the cowboy band.
I know all the songs that the cowboys know about the big corral where the dogies go, cause I learned them all on the radio.
Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. He's an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and he plays the fiddle in the cowboy band. Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. He's an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and he calls the dance in the cowboy band.
Do-si-do all around your park, swing that gal till she gets tarred, alimenta left in your own backyard.
Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. He's an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and he plays guitar in the cowboy band. Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, yippee-i-yo-ki-yay. He's an old cowhand from the Rio Grande, and he plays the bass in the cowboy band.
Welcome aboard the good ship Tube Talk, everybody. And tonight I thought we might start out with a little Western theme there tonight. So, you know, the cowboy was awful big in the 30s and 40s. If you think about Hopalong Cassidy and those little Arvin Hopalong radios, you know, that you can get pretty big money for these days if they're in good shape. You know, you go back to the golden age of radio, think of the Lone Ranger, Gunsmoke, Have Gun, Will Travel, Tales of the Texas Rangers. You know, those were the shows that ruled the airwaves for a good long time. And of course, John Wayne starring in Stagecoach in 1939, and John Ford begins his journey to make the Western into a uniquely American art form. You know, just another thread in the fabric that makes up the great American grill cloth. And everybody loved cowboys. Singing cowboys were even better. I love those harmonies, almost kind of that yodeling stuff. It was very popular in its day. Gene Autry and Roy Rogers. But, you know, I don't know if anybody was better than Gabby Hayes. Maybe Walter Brennan. Anyway, here's a little more of that sort of cowboy western theme. This is a cowboy from New Jersey.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Home, is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. How often at night, when the heavens are bright with the lights from the glittering stars, have I stood here amazed and asked as I gazed if their glory exceeds that of ours? Oh, give me a land where the bright diamond sun flows leisurely down the stream, where the graceful white swan goes gliding along like a maid in a heavenly dream. Then I would not exchange my home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play.
The Hoboken Cowboy, Mr. Frank Sinatra. That's a 1946 recording. Sounds so sweet. Put a pair of chaps on him and a hat. We'll pass him off as a cowboy. Well, welcome aboard for this evening's edition. Thanks for joining us. This is Tube Talk. I am Paul Burish. This is WRCA 1330 AM. And we stream on the WRCA website. And you can also listen to us on iHeartRadio or tune in on your mobile device.
My big eight-wheeler rolling down the track means a 211 daddy ain't coming back, 'cause I'm moving on. I'll soon be gone. You will fly too high for my little old sky, so I'm moving on. Whistle as it blew and blew, said hello to the Southland, we're coming to you and we're moving on. Oh, hear my song. You had to laugh at me, but I've set you free and I'm moving on. The fireman, won't you please listen to me, 'cause I got a pretty mama in Tennessee. Keep moving me on, keep rolling on. So shovel the coal, let this rattle a roll, and keep moving me on. Mr. Engineer, take that throttle in hand, and this rattle's the fastest in the southern land. Keep moving me on, keep rolling on. You're gonna ease my mind, put me there on time. You just wouldn't listen or pay me no mind. No, I'm moving on. I'll soon be gone. You have broken your vow and it's all over now, so I'm moving on. You switched your engine, now I ain't got time for a driving woman on my main line, 'cause I'm moving on. I'm rolling on. I've warned it twice, now you can settle the price, 'cause I'm moving on. Someday, baby, when you've had your play, you're gonna want your daddy, but your daddy will say, keep moving on.
wait too long. I'm through with you, too bad you're blue. Keep moving on.
That's Mr. Hank Snow, and he's moving on. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, in times such as they are today, it is our duty to volunteer for the service. Radio service. Let me ask you this. Are you adept with tools and a soldering iron? Can you read a schematic? Test a tube? Are you an expert woodworker, perhaps? Cabinet refinishing man or woman? Do you like to listen to fine music from the 1920s through the 1970s? If so, then Tubnik Nation needs you. So please, head to your radio, computer, or mobile device and go to WRCA 1330 AM each and every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern to fight the good fight. Listen to the good music and restore radio to what it should be. You will be so glad that you did. Enlist today. Thank you. Shift musical gears here a little bit, folks. We have had a request for some Johnny Mercer on the program. And my apologies, Eric, I neglected to bring some of my other selections this evening. I will play Johnny Mercer, singing Johnny Mercer, and you can bet your sweet bippy on that one, brother. But anyway, this is Dinah Washington doing a Johnny Mercer song. So we'll make do with this for tonight.
I wanna be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. Somebody who will swear to be true like you used to do to me. Who'll that misery loves company. Wait and see. I wanna be around to see how you take it when she starts to play your game. Same old line, yeah. And that's when I discovered to see how she does it. When she breaks your heart to bits. Oh, baby, let's see if the puzzle fits. Mm-hmm. So fine. Yes, and that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet. Yes, as I sit there applauding, yeah, from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart, yeah, breaks your heart, like you are broke mine.
Dinah Washington, and let's amble on down and see who's waiting for us in that comfy, cozy parlor with the big, beautifully lit radio and those comfy chairs.
Chicago, Chicago, I'll show you around. Bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago. Chicago, the town that Marty Faye could not shut down. On State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things that they don't do on Broadway. Say, they have the time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago. Time of their life. I saw a man, he danced with his wife in Chicago. In Chicago. In Chicago.
We are very pleased this week on Tube Talk to have Olin Schuller, who is president of the Antique Radio Club of Illinois, a very active amateur radio enthusiast from what I understand, and coordinator of all things that equal good radio out in Illinois. Olin, thanks for being on.
My pleasure to be here.
Hey, well, you know, I'll tell you what, before we get started and talk a little bit about the club and radio, let's talk a little bit about Olin. What was your background, and when did you get interested in radio and electronics? I understand you had a career that was related to electronics.
That's right. I guess my first interest in radio that I can recall came when I was about 3 years old, and we were in the middle of the Depression in 1934, 1935, listening to the things going on a 2-2 battery radio with earphones that allowed to listen to as a 3 or 4 year old kid, and I was taken by the humor that I heard from a couple of comic characters, Stoopnagel and Bud.
Stoopnagel and Bud, yeah. Who was Stoopnagel? Like, was it Hans Conry?
He was a German dialect straight man.
Very good.
And Bud was the guy with the wise answer. and their humor really came across to me as a 3, 4, 5 year old kid.
And you were hooked.
And then after that, we had electricity and a larger radio. And, of course, I remember Fibber McGee and Molly and Walter Winchell and things like that carried on my interest. And I recall some other fellow that was quite controversial in his day, a guy named Dr. Brinkley. And
can't
I'll not
that
go into that in depth, but I would urge you and your listeners to Google the name Dr. John Brinkley, see what comes up, and see how that relates to what's being advertised on the radio today.
Well, we'll have to check that out. We'll have to check that
okay.
out. Hey, now, Olin, did you remember by any chance what that other radio was when you got off the two-tube set? What was that first radio you remember
that
in the house?
That was an Atwater Kent Model 845.
Probably a fine-sounding set.
And then in about 1937, we graduated to a brand-new Crosley Model 716.
Very nice.
That had broadcast band and two shortwave bands on it.
Now you were living large then when you got the shortwave, huh? Just in time.
We were just like the Waltons.
Now, where did you grow up? Were you right outside, somewhere in Illinois, right outside the city?
I lived
or?
In central Illinois in a little tiny town called Hettich, Illinois. Its best claim to fame is that it was right under the Lindbergh mail route. When
really?
Charles Lindbergh flew from Lambert Field in St. Louis to Midway Airport in Chicago, he passed almost right directly over our house.
Now, so that's how you got interested. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you did for a living and how that kind of tied in with radio being your hobby?
Well, the interest came first to amateur radio and amateur radio then led to a job. My second job out of high school was working in a radio manufacturing plant here in Quincy, Illinois. That's in western Illinois, right on the Mississippi River. And that was working for Motorola Incorporated.
All right, Paul Galvin, right?
Yes, and I was I began there as a technician and a quality inspector. Did a little time in the Army, came back, went to a very good tech school, came out, and returned to Motorola in the mid-1950s as a production engineering technician.
Very good.
And about 15 years later, I was the manager of the department, and I stayed with them till that plant closed at the end of the radio manufacturing era in the United States, which was in the mid-1970s, that plant was sold and closed. Now, but during that time, I was an on-the-floor working engineer in a real antique radio factory.
All right. Now, you know, just out of curiosity, because I'm familiar that, you know, Zenith sort of wound things up with domestically produced tube equipment around 1967-68. How long was Motorola still in the game of domestically producing consumer radios?
Until 1976.
Very good. I didn't realize that they had hung in there that long.
Yeah, we were into solid state by that time. We had transitioned from vacuum tube to solid state in the early 1970s, and then ran on out till the end of that era.
Yeah, we saw a lot of Motorola equipment, two-way radio in trucks and fleets and police cars. My dad worked for the Edison Company up here, and they had Motorola equipment, you know, in the service trucks that was dispatched out of headquarters. And, you know, they still see the name on the cell phones and all, and it still lives on, in, at least in that respect. But
that's right.
As
now,
far as the radios, that's long
in
gone.
In the time that I was with them as an engineer from 1955 to 1976, I was kind of like Forrest Gump, you know, Forrest Gump in that movie. Was standing on the sidelines watching all kinds of interesting historic things happen. And it was much like that because I was on the scene and helped introduce things that were major steps in high fidelity, stereo phonographs, FM stereo multiplex, the 8-track tape player.
The 8-track tape, yes, indeed. Remember it well.
And does anybody remember the automotive reverb units?
I don't remember those.
Reverberation units. Well, that, in the days before we moved into FM stereo, for additional presence and auditorium feel of sound in an automobile, there was a reverberation unit which would give a few microseconds delay and a nice echo effect so that the inside of your car sounded like you were sitting in a huge auditorium.
Very interesting. I've never heard of that. You know, I can't tell you that I do recall in my sister's Dodge Duster putting in an FM converter in for her, you know, to the Mopar AM radio that she had. So,
yes,
you know, you could be one of the hip kids now. You had FM.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about it now with everything that's gone on just since then, and I say, wow, you know, I'm turning into a fossil. You know, this is crazy.
Yeah, now, that Mopar AM radio was also built in the plant where I worked. I was probably the production engineer on that line at the time.
Interesting. Now, Motorola... Excuse me, just to back up a little bit, for people who may not be too familiar with Motorola, I mean, Paul Galvin, Motorola, just as the name would indicate, got its start with, originally, I believe it was radios for vehicles, right? Going
yes,
way back.
The automobile radio was developed and made a practical commercial item by a team of Paul Galvin, and a very good technician from here in Quincy, Illinois, a guy named Elmer Wavering, who later became Motorola president.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another fellow who had been in Quincy for a time, wound up in Chicago on the development team, and his name was Bill Lear. This was Bill Lear of the Learjet.
Yeah, and were they ever tied in with, I mean, I remember seeing a few stray, you know, you'll see them every now and then at a meet, Lear Radio, L-E-A-R, radio.
Okay, Bill Lear stayed with Motorola about a year and a half or 2 years after the original introduction of the automobile radio. He became interested in and preoccupied with aviation. He sold out his interest to it. He sold out his interest in the organization back to the Galvins, took that money, and then went out to develop aircraft radio and aircraft navigation systems. And some of those navigation systems are still in systemic use today.
You know, that's great to put some of these names that you hear, you know, bandied about quite a bit, put into a framework where you can kind of understand how, you know, people come and go from companies and go to this project, to that project. That's very interesting.
Hey. And another interesting thing, in the early 1960s, when Bill Lear had developed the Learjet, he wanted a high-quality, good-sounding audio system to be able to play in the executive jets. So Lear invented the 8-track stereo player and system. Thought that had some commercial value, so he went back to his friend that he knew from Motorola, Elmer Wavering, who was then president of Motorola, and the Learjet 8-track tape unit was then marketed for the first time to the public through Motorola with an exclusive contract with the Ford Motor Company in 1966.
Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. I had a friend who had an 8-track player. He hadn't, you know, he was just a poor boy and couldn't get the cassette decks that were just coming out at the time. That would have been back probably sometime in the late 70s or so. But that is interesting. It explains why, you know, when Sean Connery was jetting around as James Bond in his Learjet, he had such that 60s swell-sounding retro jazzy bachelor pad type music going on there. That's cool. Now, while Olin was doing all of this stuff and was an engineer and all for Motorola, were you just pretty much soaking up all of the modern electronics, or did you have an interest in preserving and collecting antique radios?
I was preoccupied with what was going on at the present.
Sure.
There was something new coming every year, and after 8-track, then came quadraphonic sound.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
And we did a round with that, and then as that began to unfold, then the entire American manufactured home entertainment field began to collapse around it.
Yeah.
And then at about that time, Motorola sold their consumer products division to Matsushita Electric Company in Japan, which then went on later to operate under a product name called Quasar.
Yep, Quasar by Motorola. I had a Quasar TV. Yep. I remember their ads.
Right.
Quasar by Motorola. Yeah, I remember
that's
those right. Very well
hey,
indeed.
You do that very well. You want to be on the radio.
That's right. There could be a future for me someday. You know, you never know. Now, hey, so when you finished up your career, then your active career, is that when you got a little more active as an amateur and started to rediscover
then,
some of the old sets?
1976, then, I left the electronics field. By that time, I had learned to be a quality systems engineer and worked for the next 20 years in the quality systems engineering field, working primarily for automotive suppliers, and then I retired in 1994. And at that time, I owned a sum total of maybe 7 antique radios that were mainly family relics.
Uh-huh. Well, those are nice to have.
And my wife and I would visit antique shops, and I began to see more and more toys from a misspent youth, radios that I had worked on and had something to do with started showing up in antique shops, and I bought a few of them. And then one time I had kept hearing about this antique radio club in Chicago that has this annual convention. So it must have been 2003 that I went. And it was like waking up on Christmas morning and seeing everything you'd ever dreamed about.
I'll take them all. You know, that's the problem with all of these things. You go in there. And, you know, either because of your budget or what you have left at the house for room, or, you know, all the other projects that you have, you say, you know what, I'm going to get one, you know, and then you have to walk around, but I know I want 21. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, I did that. I showed a lot of restraint, and in the years since then, since 2003, my collection has stayed fairly manageable. It now adds up to maybe 90 sets.
Well, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. I knew a fellow down south who almost confessed. You know, he said a guy, he said, "So, John, how many radios do you really have?" And he was an older gentleman at the time. He said, "Well," he said, "the spare bedroom is full of them. It's 140, and I've been selling them for the last few years." And he still had 140 left, but he was trying to move them along, you know, so try to get some space in case he ever had a guest over, somebody wanted to go in there. So that's how you found the Antique Radio Club. When did you get involved in leadership? When did you start to get more active in it?
Well, I was just an attendee until maybe it was 5 years ago. I saw an opportunity that I could maybe help the club in their meet by bringing in a display of my better Motorola radios.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought in maybe 30 of them and set them up in the contest room as a secondary display, not in the contest, but just for general viewing. Well, that attracted enough attention that then I was propositioned to be one of the officers.
Well, we're always looking for a few good men, you know.
And so it seemed to me that would be a great idea, would be a great thing to do, to put some time into that, because I knew from past life experiences that if you want to have pleasure, satisfaction, and enjoyment, you have to put some work into it.
That's about the size.
So I was willing to do that, and I have been paid back at least 50-fold for every bit of effort that I put in. I've gotten 50-1 back on happiness and pleasure and satisfaction on the things that I see happen.
Well, you know, that's great. And, you know, you may or may not know, but I am a subscriber. I receive the Antique Radio Club of Illinois Archie News when it comes out. So I get occasionally, you know, I'll get to look at the pictures of the different swaps and all, and I'll see you giving the winning raffle winner his prize, and you seem to enjoy it, you know, very sincerely, getting everybody together and watching the smiles on the faces. And it's, you know, it's great to have a good club as a focal point if you're a collector, because it gives you some structure, it gives you a lot of connections, you know, people who can help you, whether it's parts or who've done something before, you know, they've done that repair or they've restored that radio and they can give you some advice. So it opens up, you know, for the collector, sort of a whole new vista as far as, you know, one, I'm not the only person who has this horrible affliction that, you know, I have to collect all these radios. So it gives you somebody to commiserate with. But you also get an awful lot of good information and a lot of nice friendships, too. And there's a lot of very gentlemanly types involved in this hobby, I have to say.
Yes, this is a group of genuine gentlemen. We are all a little bit bunch of tightwads generally, but we are true gentlemen, I believe.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, kind of we'll talk a little bit about Radio Fest, which is coming up, which I know is your big event every year, and I talked to Barry Janov on it. We've talked about it before here on the show, and you've got a couple of people down there who we know here and have been on the show. I know you've got Cam Trowbridge is going to come out, and he's going to give a presentation on Marconi. And you guys,
and I'm looking forward to that.
You guys are going to love that, because not only did he write a great book, and he's a polished guy, and he's a good speaker. From what I understand, he's done many of these presentations, so he's got it down pat, and he really knows his man. And I tell you, I thought I knew a little bit about Marconi, but by the time I was done listening to Cam, I knew quite a bit more. And another friend of ours is Jim Sargent from the VRPS, who's going to be doing your auction. I've had him on before, and as a matter of fact, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and he said he's quite excited to come and do the auction again. He's fully retired now, if you didn't know. He's finished up, and he's got a lot more time for his auction business and a lot more time to collect radio, too. So he's very pleased to come up.
Jim is a genuine, certifiable Texas gentleman.
Hey, you know, his family roots are from somewhere up in New Hampshire, he told me. So when I called him, he says, yeah, I've got a connection to New England. And he says, really? And he said, yeah, I think his folks are, I don't know how many generations back, actually came from a mountain somewhere up in New Hampshire that had that family name attached to it. So I said, yeah, well, you know, everybody comes from somewhere. That's the wonder of America. So, but he's a class act, and the only regret I have is, you know, we talked a lot on the show about this and that, but, you know, I never gave him a couple of minutes just to say, you know what, let me give you a sample radio here and give us your auction spiel, because I know when you listen to a good auctioneer, I mean, you just say, wow, you know, and I thought I could talk. You know, this guy can go. He's very good, and he's very professional, and he knows what's going on, and, you know, people enjoy it. Even if you don't buy anything, you just enjoy watching the whole thing and seeing how everything is presented. And when you can listen to a real pro, you know, it's not the type of business that's for everybody. If you're a good auctioneer, that's fantastic. So now you guys have got 3 days coming up in August where it is really a big Midwest event out there. And I know you start with an auction, and then the next day you have programs. And what have we got on the listing for programs this time around?
All right. Well, on the programs, we will first of all have a forum on vacuum tube audio equipment.
Mm-hmm. Very popular then, these days. All the audiophiles like to check that out. Yeah.
And then another one is on a special presentation on high fidelity audio.
I think it's John Stone is doing the loudspeakers, right?
Okay. This will cover high fidelity and audio and loudspeakers. and it'll be done by John Stone.
Yep, John Stone.
Who is a representative of a top quality manufacturing operation in Norway.
Yeah, that'll be a fascinating talk. You know, and not to get off the topic here, but answer me this: I think they were a Chicago company. It might ring a bell, and you may be able to answer this question. Does Quam Nickel still in business? Do they still make speakers out there?
I know the name. I don't know if they're still in business.
You know, because I think I saw somewhere that they were. I'll have to check that out myself. But, you know, that's something that's oft neglected. Everybody wants to talk about capacitor replacement and antennas. And so that ought to be a great topic to cover the loudspeaker section. Then you've got a ham radio forum with show and tell your favorite piece of ham equipment. And that ought to be a nice take for anybody
that
who's interested
is,
in the amateur is. Side of things, huh?
That will be run by an amateur radio operator's amateur radio operator. Bill Ross, W9WR, does such a great job with that. Sitting and listening to his forum sounds the way the 75-meter phone band used to sound when guys were on their rag-chewing in the 1950s. It's just a joy to sit in that session.
Well, that ought to be a kick. And then this piqued my interest when I saw this topic, Briggs & Stratton in Radio in a Personal Quest by Dale Boyce. Now, you know, for somebody who's not as familiar with it like myself, is that the same Briggs & Stratton we know and love from the small engine
yes,
famous?
It is.
Yep.
That was, yes, it is. That was a small subsidiary that I think worked with Crystal Sets and a little bit beyond that in the 1920s.
That's fascinating. So that ought to be very interesting. You know, a lot of times you'll hear about companies and you don't have an idea of the whole scope of their operations. And you say Briggs & Stratton, people say motors. But that ought to be very interesting to hear the aspect of radio involvement they had.
Yeah.
And then I guess the last presentation there is our pal Cam Trowbridge, Marconi in Business and Politics. And that ought to be a whiz banger. That's going to be interesting. He's a great speaker, and he knows his guy. And Marconi is certainly a fascinating personality. You know, where would we be without him? So that's a great way to end up all the presentations. Now, the year that you guys are sort of focusing on and celebrating is 1938, which is a great year. One of my favorite radios I have, I've been listening to it now the last couple of weeks, is a RCA 86T6, I believe, and it's a 1938 set, six tubes, and it's in a I don't have a lot of deco style radios, but this one has a nice rounded cabinet, a 6-inch speaker. It's a beautiful sounding set. It has a really nifty dial glass, and 1938 was a great year for radio, and 75 years young, the thing still sounds super. So I know you'll have a display there. You'll have some Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy stuff and memorabilia from radio shows and Art Deco display, Catalan and plastic radios from 1938, and all other types of related items. That in itself would be enough to get me to come out, because I really enjoy that type of presentation.
And I have a small collection of Motorola radios from that year, because that was the year that Motorola entered the home radio scene.
Mm-hmm,
they had developed their business with automobile radios, and in 1938 they brought out their first home sets. So I have a very nice console and a very nice table model, and another smaller table model, and then a very unusual radio that was made to either operate off of 110-volt power inside the house, or you could take it out to the car and hook up to the car battery and to an antenna, and it was an automobile radio also.
Huh, that's very neat. I'd like to see that one. So you could go out and listen to the ball game if you wanted to out in the car. That's cool. That's very cool. You know, it's interesting, too. You know, Chicagoland has got a great tie-in with lots of different radio companies. I mean, Zenith comes to mind, but you start going down the list, and there were all kinds of manufacturers out there. So it just, you know, Radio Fest ties in so well for a lot of different reasons. You know, I recently saw, and I don't know how long ago he did it. I don't even know if it's still standing. I'm going to guess it was the old factory they had. Was it on West Dickens Avenue, or the big Zenith facility that they had there? Fella had taken all these pictures of, you know, how it's fallen into disrepair and it's covered with graffiti. And I mean, you look at it and you say, you know, I mean, even if just a section of it could have been, you know, somehow saved and preserved and to document, you know, it was just another great company with a great history from the days of, you know, when the equipment was used primarily to speak to world explorers, and it was an amateur company before they became focused on consumer, and then they had the great TVs, and they also, you know, were one of the last guys standing, I guess, along with Motorola, still making the tube stuff here in the United States. So you just look at how it's fallen apart, and it's a shame that, you know, we don't have more of a memorial to them. But I, you know, it's the same thing. I look at Ron Ramirez's site, and he has all these pictures of what was left of the Philco buildings, which isn't much. But, you know, again, it's just ripped out and taken down. And, you know, I don't know if it's that era we weren't as keen on preserving our history as much as we are now. But
that's right.
You know, it's great to see that there are still folks keeping the information available to people at forums like Radio Fest. So
that's right.
I can't wait to see the displays from the Golden Age of Radio, 1938. I'll have to stay tuned for the photos from that. Anything else of note going on? This is easy to remember, too, because it's August 1, 2, and 3. What could be simpler than that, right? Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Radio Fest 2013, and that's in Willowbrook, correct?
That is right, and that is very easy to access off of Interstate 55 coming in from the south or out of downtown Chicago. And we are near to the interstate exit, and it's easy in, easy out.
Well, anybody who's remotely interested in radios or entertainment or anything from that period to the 1938, Google up ARCI, check out their website, get some information on Radio Fest. And you won't be sorry that you checked it out, because every year everybody tells me it's great.
The easiest way to find us on the Internet with the least amount of clicking around is to head for our website, which is www.antiqueradio-radios.org.
And you'll find them. Very good.
That's right.
Well, you know, and I guess you guys hook up with, you have a nice working relationship with the Wisconsin Antique Radio Club as well, Greg Hunholtz.
Yes, we do. They
are a swell guy.
They're a great group up there, and some of their members are our members, and we take pleasure in working with them, and we try to support them as much as we support ourselves.
Well, you know, there's a lot of cooperation, I know, to pull this thing off, and especially a 3-day event. So I wish you all the best with it. I can't wait to hear the reviews and see some photos from it. Olin Schuler, thank you so much for being our guest on Tube Talk tonight. We appreciate it.
My pleasure to be here.
You take care now. Good night now. Bye bye.
Somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sand and watches the ships that go sailing. Somewhere beyond the sea, she's there watching for me. If I could fly like birds on to her arms, I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt, my heart will lead me there soon. Meet beyond the shore.
I don't think I have to tell you that that's Bobby Darin. Thanks again, Olin Schuller, for being our guest this evening. You are a radio gem, one of those gentlemen that just make being in this hobby so rewarding. It's nice when you have a chance to chat with a class guy who's got a lot of great stories to share. So thanks, Olin. We appreciate it. On to a little housekeeping, because we have had an email concerning the musical selections played on this program. And the emailer, and I'll paraphrase this a little bit, essentially writes in, "Well, I enjoy the music, but shouldn't everything be from the 30s and 40s, as that was really the heyday of vintage radio? Why all the stuff from later years?" Well, you know, that's a pretty good question. Why do we hop around here, have a little musical variety? Shouldn't everything be from the 30s and 40s? Well, let's see. You know, I do play some music sometimes outside the vacuum tube era, and probably the last domestic tube sets were late 60s, maybe like 1968 or so for Zenith, I would guess. So here we go. If I deem it enjoyable, if it is a good vocalist, a great lyric, a quality composer, I will play it. Simple as that. So I do like to feature older music, as it does mesh so nicely with, you know, the vintage radio manufacturing era, and that's the vibe we're trying to create here every week. However, all good music, and I will underscore that, all good music sounds better on a well-restored vintage radio. On that, I think we all would agree. So sometimes, you know, we'll bend the musical rules here a little bit. We'll bend that time frame. We'll play some music that just sounds good. And hopefully we'll include a lot of your favorites and a lot of chestnuts from the 30s and 40s. Things that go so well, like a quality crumpet with your quality cup of tea. And anyway, so I hope that's a good answer. And I would encourage anybody who has a question, a comment, a reaction to something they hear on this program, email us. It's tubetalk1@gmail.com. Have your questions or concerns addressed over the air by your humble announcer.
And you could be one of those kids, you know, gee, I sent an email and the guy read it all over the air and everything. He even played a song for me.
So, you know, I take requests too. And just to kind of go back to where we were on our musical talk here, you know, what kind of music do we play? You never really know sometimes what you'll hear. You could wind up with, you know, some more cowboy stuff, kind of like this stuff right here. Tumbling along.
See them tumbling down, ledging along to the ground. Lonely but free I'll be found, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed.
I nights underneath a prairie moon. I ride alone and sing a tune.
See them tumbling down, pledging their love to the ground. Lonely but free I'll be found, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed. Cares of the past are behind, nowhere to go but I'll find, just where the trail will wind, drifting along with the tumbling tumbleweed.
I'd like to thank you all for listening. Drop us a line at tubetalk1@gmail.com. And I wish you all a good night. We'll see you next week.